Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to the Inside China Basin Baseball Podcast on thesportsvirus.com, featuring players like all-star catcher Buster Posey.
It's about, you know, just going out and trying to have passion for the game that I've loved since I was a kid.
And San Francisco Chronicle columnist John Shea is our regular guest, too.
Bumgarner, he's a god, isn't he? He does all these things that no other humans do.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by Sun First Solar, known for delivering solar excellence since 1984 and recently voted best solar company in Marin County. We're also brought to you by Terzo, an authentic upscale European neighborhood restaurant in the heart of Cow Hollow in San Francisco. Today's guest in part two of our conversation, San Francisco Chronicle columnist John Shea. Well, John, when you look geographically south and then in the standings, that would be way north at the Los Angeles Dodgers.
I know where you're going with this.
They are the antithesis of the Giants this season. They've got everything working well. They're way out in front, best team in baseball, and they made moves at the deadline, significant moves, especially getting Yu Darvish, who's going to start Friday against the Mets. So they have all kinds of pitching to begin with, and then they just add on Darvish, and they've got all these young position players that are producing. So, I mean, there's plenty to be jealous about right now, I guess, if you're a Giants fan looking at the Dodgers, right?
I think the Dodgers might be going for it. I'm not sure, but I think the Dodgers yeah. might be going for it. The whole Darvish news really didn't take, it really didn't come into fruition until, you know, the hour before the deadline. The Rangers and the Dodgers weren't seriously talking until, just the final moments there. And then suddenly the Dodgers, who never trade at the deadline, they're always moving pieces, you know, rarely trade at the deadline. They're always moving pieces in the off season. And this time they said, well, you know, with Kershaw out, and they're expecting them to pitch in September, you know, when Kershaw comes back and Darvish, and then you have Alex Wood, who's been pitching well, and Rich Hill, who's back. And by the way, if in case we need a fifth guy, you know, Brandon McCarthy, Maeda, Ryu, some of these guys have pitched well. They had the lowest ERA in the majors before they got Yu Darvish as a rotation. And Darvish has had a couple of clunkers of late, but his strikeout ratio, if he's back to normal with that team, wow, look out in the postseason. I mean, then again, Kershaw has to be healthy, and he has to be a lot better than he has been in the postseason. But, you know, maybe under the radar moves, it wasn't just Darvish. They got a couple of left-handed relievers, Tony Watson, Tony Cingrani. They picked up these guys at the deadline and say, well, you know, who cares? Well, remember when the Giants picked up a guy named Javier Lopez at the deadline back in 2010 and how valuable he was. And, Affelt previously. So they pick up these two guys. Well, you say, what does it matter? Well, they're going to be in the postseason, and they'd have a pretty bad track record in the postseason, except for 1988. Everything since, they've fallen short. And if they play the Cubs or if they play Washington, well, they have guys named Bryce Harper and Anthony Rizzo. And the Dodgers now feel that they got left-handers in the bullpen who might be able to get those guys out. They do have track records against those guys. So that they're thinking not just about getting there, not just we're happy to be in the post, but about, hey, who's going to get Harper out in the seventh inning? Who's going to get Rizzo out in the eighth inning if we're in game four of the NLCS against one of these teams? So that's how far they're looking ahead. And, you know, this division is already won. It's already a given, you know, that they're going to play the wild card team, and they beat them in the first round, and then the next whatever. You know, it's a great team to watch. Sadly for Giant fans, but the youth that they've developed. I mean, my goodness, them and the Yankees. Remember how the Dodgers and Yankees used to rely on nothing but overpriced, maybe overrated free agents. Well, look at them now.
Yeah.
Both of those teams have players that came through the system or that prospects they acquired in trades early on. And now we're seeing these two teams with these outrageous payrolls But suddenly the nucleus is the young guys.
More with John Shea in just a moment. Remember that old Abbott and Costello baseball routine? Who's on first? What's on second? I don't know is on third? Well, actually, when talking about third, I do know that terzo means third in Italian, as in a third place to gather and share food and wine. That would be for your third meal of the day. Ah, yes, dinner. And it should be your first choice when you're looking for an authentic, upscale European neighborhood restaurant. Located in the heart of Cal Hollow, Terzo is a beautiful combination of modern and cozy. Terzo's food is inspired by the coastal regions around the Mediterranean Sea, sourced from their bountiful local farms and ranches. The eclectic and diverse wine list is attractively priced, draws from regions all over the world, and is designed to pair perfectly with the cuisine. Terzo, 3011 Steiner at Union Street in San Francisco. And by the way, I do know Christian Arroyo at third base. The best part for the Dodgers when they made that Darvish trade and the other trades, they didn't even have to give up their best prospects. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the Alex Verdugo, his name kept coming up, and no, they didn't have to trade him or even Buehler, one of their minor league pitchers. They kept their best guys. They didn't have to trade those guys.
So they're looking good in the future, and they're looking good in the present. 35 games?
Yeah.
Ahead of the Giants? The Giants are going to be eliminated at any minute now. I mean, that's ludicrous.
Yeah, and they're hitting all kinds of home runs, the Dodgers. I mean, Bellinger and Seager had an incredible series against the Giants. They look great. You know, we talk about these big-name pitchers, like getting Darvish, but Verlander didn't go, and Johnny Cueto didn't go anywhere. And that's not a surprise because he got hurt. I mean, he had the blister problems. He has another issue right now with a forearm tightness issue that's not as serious as maybe they thought at first, so that's good news. But as far as, you know, trying to trade him, it just became where it wasn't real possible to do that. So what do you think the future is now for Johnny Cueto? Because he still could opt out, although it looks like his better deal would be to not opt out and just stay with the Giants.
This might be a blessing in disguise for the Giants, believe it or not. You know, last year we all remember how dynamic he was. He started the All-Star game. It seemed every start was seven innings and one or two runs, and then you get out there and the bullpen would finish up. But this year he has a bad ERA, he's got the blister issues, and now he's got the elbow issue. And, you know, thankfully for the Giants, it's not a major, you know, it's not a tendon. It's a muscle issue. It's a flexor strain in the elbow. Not as seriously as the stuff that Matt Cain had a few years ago with the flexor tendon strain. So, you know, this is no Tommy John surgery stuff. This is just something that, he might be able to, you know, miss a start, maybe miss two starts. He had a similar issue in Cincinnati years ago, and he missed only one start because of it. So why is it a blessing in disguise? Well, if he had last year's production in 2018, he would opt out, and he would get more money than, you know, what's on the table for him in the next 4 years, which is $84 million, 21 per year. But do you opt out now with the injury issues, with the, you know, ERA that's ballooned, with the fact that you're not pitching deep into games? You're not the same Johnny Cueto, and you're getting well into your 30s here. So maybe the Giants, who really need rotation depth beyond, you know, like last year when they started with Bumgarner, then went to Cueto. If they have that 1-2 punch, then maybe the pressure is off a little bit on Samardzija and Ty Block, and so on. Who, you know, if Matt Moore is back, you know, they don't have to be the all-encompassing guys. They don't have to win every game. They can rely on the 1-2 punch to kind of lead the rotation, which they just have not had this year. So the pressure is on every guy a little bit more to be the ace for the moment, and it's just not happening. So I can envision Cueto, after the season, not opting out. And by the way the contract is structured, it's a six-year deal, and after the second year, he can opt out. So if he doesn't opt out, he's the Giants' property for the next 4 years. Now, that doesn't give him the opportunity to opt out after year three or after year four. It's a one-time deal.
One-time thing, right.
It's got to be after the second year, and once he doesn't opt out, then he's a Giant forever. But if he does opt out, I don't know if he's going to get anything north of $84 million over 4 years after the season he's had and after the injuries and the age he's going to be.
It'd be interesting to see, too, because then if he stays with the Giants, you've got Bumgarner, Cueto, Moore, and Samardzija. I mean, that's pretty much the same rotation. I don't know that you were thrilled this year. I mean, yeah, Bumgarner got hurt. Those other guys need to step it up for sure, and then you're going to need one more starter. And is that Tyler Beattie or is that a free agent? Because, you know, Matt Cain won't be in the rotation anymore. So that'll be interesting to see how they handle that one more spot there.
And Ty Block.
Yeah, well, that's true, too. Has he proven that he's going to just have that spot? Yeah, I guess, you know, right, Ty Block has shown that he's pitched pretty well this year.
Well, in the first half, I think Bochy might look at him as perhaps the most consistent guy.
Right.
I mean, we saw Samardzija has, you know, through the roof numbers in terms of strikeout to walk ratio. You know, the home runs he gives up, you know, just can't continue to work, but it's a baseball-wide thing now, home runs. Everybody gives them up. And pitchers who didn't used to give them up now are giving them up. So it doesn't seem to be going away. Samardzija is who Samardzija is. And that's a guy with a lot of strikeouts, few walks, and home runs. I mean, perfect modern-day pitcher, right? Modern-day baseball is right, about walks, strikeouts, and home runs. And that's Samardzija
right, in
a nutshell. So, I mean, you might see the exact same rotation that was projected for this year, but with help, and maybe they figure Matt Moore out. Maybe something clicks with that guy, because they can't have another year like that. I mean, he, like Bumgarner, has kind of a team-friendly option for 2018. I think it's $9 million. And where are you going to get a guy, you know, off the, you know, market or in a trade with a track record, at least before this season, of a Moore? Maybe it's not done. So maybe they try to figure him out and let him go out there again next year. But it's a roll of the dice going with the same rotation that didn't get it done this year.
We'll continue the conversation with John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle right after this. Jones goes back near the wall, shading the sun, and he dropped it. He lost the ball in the sun. Let's put the sun to good use at home with a SunPower residential solar system. Your SunPower elite dealer, SunFirst Solar, has a wide range of financing options, and they provide the finest customer service from start to finish, regardless of size or scope. SunFirst Solar offers the highest efficiency systems, newest technology, and the best warranty in the world. SunFirst Solar offers the most competitive price while not compromising on quality. This summer, let the sun heat your pool and eliminate your energy bill. Don't drop the ball. Call SunFirst Solar at 415-458-5870. That's 415-458-5870. And get your SunPower solar system today. I did want to touch on the Hall of Fame, and especially what happened as far as the Ford Frick Award with Bill King having that award posthumously. And he had just a great career. He could be in every Hall of Fame, really, when you think about it. He was one of the best NFL announcers, definitely one of the best NBA announcers, and then baseball as well. And I think he was underrated for his baseball. What was the thought you had about Bill King having to wait a while to get into the Hall of Fame as far as the Ford Frick Award?
No, you're right. I think the great thing about Bill King is he was so good at all three sports that it penalized him when it time to, you know, in all these Hall of Fame votes.
Right.
Because the football Hall of Fame says, well, he does basketball and baseball. The basketball Hall of Fame says, well, he does football and baseball. Baseball Hall of Fame says, well, he does basketball and football. Well, you know, hate to penalize the guy for being one of the best ever in all three of them. And people will say, well, baseball was his third best. It happened later in life. He started up in 1980 after he was, you know, great calling the Warriors, great calling the Raiders in the 60s and 70s. And, but I don't think that's true at all. I just think that it was new to the fan base to hear him do baseball. Well, guess what? Baseball was always his first love. He was a catcher as a kid, growing up on a farm and then later, small towns in the Midwest. He was, he actually considered a, he was supposedly a spectacular catcher in high school. considered a pro career, went into the military, stationed in Guam, a bit after World War II, and, got into radio during the military with the Armed Forces Network and kind of fell in love. You know, he's always been a talker, kind of fell in love with the sea, with boats, with the Pacific, and came back, did some minor league games for several years, did some, college broadcasting, and then came to the Bay Area in 1958, the year the Giants moved west, and worked at KTVU. He was actually working for KGO radio, doing marine reports, riding around in a boat in the bay, and radioing reports to the radio station. He did the Giants for a year or two in the when he arrived. That's the third guy behind Lon Simmons and Russ Hodges. You know, people don't know that. So, baseball was his life early on. He did a bunch of minor league baseball games in the Midwest before coming here to the Bay Area. And then when the Warriors came, he was the Warriors guy. And the Raiders came, he was the Raiders guy. And so people, kind of equated him with those sports. But then he got into baseball. He was just as spectacular, in my opinion. What a combination. Probably the best broadcast combination in Bay Area history. Bill King and Lon Simmons doing the A's. Are you kidding me? I mean, Lon and Russ were right up there. But, you're not going to find a better duo in this market, ever. In terms of those two guys, they were both wonderful, and they didn't have the egos that they had to, especially Bill, where he just had to do, this or that. And, it's not like he went into a sports bar afterward, got recognized, signed autographs. He hated that stuff. He wanted to go back to Sausalito, where he lived in a sailboat for a couple of years, and then moved ashore to an apartment with his family. He hooked up with his partner, Nancy Stevens, in the early 60s. And, she died in 04. He died in 05. So they were together for 44 years. And, it was a spectacular life, spectacular pro in the booth. I mean, everybody loved him. Would you say he's the greatest broadcaster in Bay Area sports history?
I would say
so. Is there somebody else I'm missing?
No, he was one of my idols, and I would say, yeah, he was the greatest, especially because of his versatility. And one of the things you detailed in your story in the San Francisco Chronicle was how he had varied interests, and you talked at length with his stepdaughter, Kathleen Lowenthal, who gave the speech in Cooperstown and said, "Holy Toledo," and all that. But I think that's what made him special as well, was that he was an eccentric person. He wasn't just a broadcaster.
Yeah, he went home. Yes, he studied, he researched. No, nobody did more. I mean, listening to some of the folks around the majors, you wonder if they do any research. But Bill was, always, he just didn't want to be bothered a year, an hour or two before the game, because, Ken Korak will tell you that he's so intensely involved in preparing for the game, and he did a lot of preparation at home. But on the road, he, like I said, didn't want to hang out with people talking ball. He wanted to hang out with people, talking the arts, jazz, opera, the theater, a good book. In the early 90s, he got into landscape painting. He always told Nancy, I want to paint. And then finally, she gave him all the everything she, a guy would want to paint. And he started, he lived, like you said, lived in Sausalito. So he'd go out and take pictures of scenery, whether it's some red headlands or the bay or the bridge or the city, and then go home and paint from these pictures. And I did a big story on the stepdaughter, Kathleen Lowenthal, who gave the speech, wonderful speech at Cooperstown on behalf of Bill. And she had these paintings that were just beautiful of Bill's. And, pictures of the boats that they lived in as kids. She was about 9, and her brother was about 10, John, when Bill came into the family's life. And she said, "Bill, we didn't know this stuff because we never heard it. Bill never talked to Brad or talked in a personal life." But she said that he was the rock of the family. And, they loved him. And it's not like the family was big into baseball, big into sports. And I think he liked that about it. It was all about boats. And when the summers came, it was, heading down south in the Pacific, heading up north in the Pacific, going to Hawaii, wherever. And so it was a great life, a great career, and finally he's in a Hall of Fame. And as you said, he easily could be in more than one.
Absolutely. And by the way, for those who wondered why he wasn't a television star, I found that out. The only interview I ever did with him, John, was when I was with SiriusXM in 2005, that last year before he passed away, when he was with the Oakland A's. And I asked him that question about, you know, how come you didn't do a lot of television? And he said he hated it. That, you know, when he did try to do it, it was all about what the director wanted. It, you know, he couldn't really go in his own direction. And, you know, that kind of said it all. I mean, he was creative and he didn't want to follow what a director's creation was for the telecast.
Yeah, you're right, and I think there's a great story early on with the Warriors where, you know, they just didn't want to put him on the air because he had a beard. Just, you know, they wanted to see the clean-cut guy. You
right.
know? This is the early 60s. So Franklin Muehle, the owner back then, a great friend of Bill's over time, came up with the idea, said, okay, we'll have that slick-looking, clean-shaven guy in pregame and postgame, and then he'll just hand it to Bill, and you'll never see Bill, but you'll just hear Bill. So that's what they did for a year.
Wow.
Bill said, that's fine with me. I don't want to be on TV. And the beauty of radio, as you know, isn't just saying, hey, look at that kid in the third row, or, you know, let's get some, garlic fries. It's painting the picture for the listener. You really don't even need a broadcaster on TV, right? I mean, maybe I'm talking to the wrong guy about this.
But, well, I've done both, so I understand
painting the
it. Yeah.
Painting the picture on radio is a lot different than TV, where you don't have to paint the picture. You see the picture. And Bill didn't want any of that TV nonsense. He just wanted to do all radio because it was the story he told had to be. John Miller tells a story when he was a kid that he was listening to the radio, a Warriors game, and he kept stats through Bill's words.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, sometimes a broadcaster might miss a rebound or assist. And he said the whole game, he had all the numbers right, all the stats right, except he was off by one rebound. and I said, well, that's pretty good description of a game, yeah. If you ask me.
It's a good ratio right there. No, I would say that I think almost every television announcer will tell you that they kind of miss the radio part. I mean, just that passion and the ability to describe that you can't do it on television. I think a lot of the television guys miss that.
Yeah, no, you're right. And now we see a lot more MLB Network. We see a lot more broadcasts of games. And if you have the MLB app where you could listen to every radio call of the game. I try to do that a lot. I really got hooked last year when I tried to listen to Vin Scully every game. And I said, well, let me listen to a lot of these other guys. So I got the app, and so I was able to do that. And some announcers, you wonder what they're there for. I mean, no knock on anybody, but that's just the way it is. Where's the description? Where's the detail? Where's the insight? I want to learn something from this guy. I want to learn something from this broadcast.
Right.
But that's why I kind of, you know, I'd rather listen to radio, you know, see how good this guy can paint that picture. Is he going to be as good as Bill? Well, no, but nobody is. I think you and I grew up more in radio listening to broadcasts, and I think that's the genuine way to do it. I think, and if you're a good radio broadcaster, you should be able to paint that picture, so you don't need to see the TV. Yeah, come back, see the highlights, but I still prefer listening to a ball game than watching a ball game. Sometimes I'll do both, but just a habit going back to childhood, I think.
Yeah. Well, John, as Mike Kruko said on the telecast on Tuesday, it's the dog days of August already. He's bringing that up on August the 1st. So thank you very much for helping me here in the dog days of August for the Giants, being 35 games out and battling for the worst record in Major League Baseball right now. And look forward to catching up with you soon.
Yeah, well, hey, we had the dog days of April, dog days of May.
Right.
We had it all through. Why not have the dog days of August?
All right, thanks, John.
Thanks a lot, Joe.
That's John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle. Join us again on Friday. We'll be talking to former KNBR talk show host Ray Woodson. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin on thesportsvirus.com.